Sorry that I missed last week, but I was unavailable.
Désolé que le témoin qui est semaine dernière là n'est pas disponible.
But as usual, we'll start by asking, are there any questions based on what we've already covered?
Comme toujours, on va commencer avec des questions basées sur ce que tu as couvert déjà. Si quelqu'un a une question, on va poser une question.
Okay, apparently there are no questions. That's fine. I'm sure we'll have some later on. So let's do a little bit of review from last time. So last time we talked about the Anabaptist movement. These were our brothers and sisters. They attempted to create a church made up of only disciples. They tried to overthrow the idea of Christendom. The idea that the government and the church are the same entity. And we were very amazed and impressed at their commitment to following biblical teachings, biblical patterns. We also saw that they splintered into many groups, which is a pattern with churches that try to follow New Testament principles. And the reason for this is, when we try to restore New Testament teachings, when we say the only standard of truth is the Bible, this raises a problem. The problem is this. What are the essential teachings? Church history tells us that when we try to establish and restore New Testament Christianity, this creates division.
Histoire l'église là apprend nous que là nous avons établi ou bien restauré enseignement Nouveau Testament, ça crée un pile problème.
Because like I said, what are the essential teachings?
Comme on dit, qui ça qui enseignement essentiel yo?
And how do we retain unity based on people who disagree over teachings that perhaps are not essential?
Comment que pour nous restaurer unité, les gens qui désagréent avec des enseignements qui pas bibliques?
And people tend to divide over what are the essential teachings.
Mon APC divisé dans ça qui pas enseignement qui essentiel.
So there's a lesson for us in this.
Il y a une leçon pour nous dans ça.
We will see, perhaps today, but certainly by next Saturday, in the Stone Campbell movement, this was a problem. Efforts to restore New Testament Christianity tend to have problems of division. At first, this might be surprising. You would think unity under the Bible would be easy.
Surprising. le mouvement, mais et c'est ça qui est arrivé.
Why is it that the Catholic Church can be remain united but Christians can't?
Pourquoi ça que l'Église catholique est capable de unifier et puis l'Église chrétienne n'est pas capable d'unifier?
The reason is that the Catholic Church accepts the authority of the Church over the members.
La raison c'est que l'Église catholique l'a accepté autorité l'Église là au-dessus de membre l'Église là.
So the Church decides.
So l'Église l'a décidé.
And the people submit.
Et puis membres ils soumettent.
Either that or they leave the Church.
C'est soit ça ou bien ils quittent l'Église là.
But we accept only the authority of the Bible. That's great, of course. That's how it should be, obviously. But if there's no central authority, this leads to the possibility of division. So it raises the question, how can we as a fellowship of churches remain fully united? If there's no central authority to tell us what we need to believe. But anyway, the story of the Anabaptists is a wonderful story, a very encouraging story.
De toute façon, histoire anabaptiste sont histoire qui très encourageant.
The only mistake that I would offer is that they, because of the intense persecution, they retreated from the world.
Seule erreur que je suis capable de parler de eux, c'est parce à cause de persécution qui était très intense, qui était très forte. Ils ont déjà rallié quoi du monde là.
Then we talked about Calvin and Calvinism. Jean Calvin, perhaps the greatest Bible teacher in history.
Jean Calvin, qui était peut-être plus grand enseignant biblique dans l'histoire.
But like Zwingli, he was Augustinian. He followed Augustine.
Comme Zwingli, il était Augustinien, idéologie, il était suivre enseignement Augustin.
And he had a very strong sense of predestination. He taught total depravity and unconditional election. And therefore, our salvation is not based on anything that we do. Then we talked about Jacob Arminius, who was the theological opponent of Calvinism. He believed that we have free will. He believed that God gives us prevenient grace. I just realized I had the wrong PowerPoint here. I'm going to change that. Here we go. I was in the English version. Okay, here we go. Here's the French version. All right, so he believed in la grâce prévenante, right? Prevenient grace.
Il était quoi la grâce prévenante?
And as I said, we are, would be considered by others as Arminian. Because we believe that God gives us a choice of whether we will follow him or not.
Parce que nous croyons que bon Dieu pas nous ont choix pour décider si nous devons suivre ou pas.
And we believe that it's required for us to be a disciple, to repent and be baptized.
Nous croyons que il faut nous rendre ici pour nous repentir et pour nous baptiser.
Then we talked about the pietists, the German pietists.
Et puis nous parlons de pietistes allemands.
And the Moravians.
Avec Marivien et yo.
And Count Zinzendorf.
Count Zinzendorf.
Who was the first Protestant to begin evangelizing and sending missionaries all over the world.
Count Zinzendorf, c'était le premier protestant qui a commencé mission à voyer monde partout dans le monde là pour enseigner la Bible.
The most important of the pietist groups that we'll talk about are the Methodists.
Group qui est important, group pietiste que l'on parle de eux, c'est Methodiste, yo.
This was a very, very important religious movement in the 18th century.
C'est un mouvement qui est très important dans le siècle, dans le 18e siècle.
This is during a period that we called the Second Reformation. It's when countries began to give their citizens religious freedom.
And
this is when a number of denominations began to form. Among those would be the Quakers. And the Moravians.
Avec Moravien, yo.
But most importantly by far would be the Methodists.
Mais plus important, c'est Methodiste, yo.
Oh, and also the Baptists.
Avec Baptiste, yo.
Remember, we mentioned two kinds of Baptists.
Rappelons que nous t'ai parlé de deux différents, deux types de Baptistes.
That was in the quiz, wasn't it?
The
General Baptists, who are Arminian.
Baptiste généreux qui était arminien.
And the particular Baptists, who are Calvinist.
Et Baptiste particulier qui était calviniste.
And when the Baptists came to America, almost all of them were Calvinists.
Et les Baptistes étaient en Amérique et presque tous étaient calvinistes.
But let's remind ourselves of John Wesley. He created what became known as the Methodist Church. He was Arminian. And he was a pietist. What that means is that for him, Christianity involved a feeling. It involved an individual personal relationship with God. The pietists emphasize a conversion experience. And through the influence of John Wesley,
avec influence John Wesley,
in England and the United States,
Angleterre avec États-Unis,
conversion began to involve some kind of a very emotional experience.
Conversion, venue la donner, une expérience émotionnelle.
John Wesley was very, very devoted to his faith.
John Wesley était très dévoué avec la foi.
He believed in a strong holiness and relationship with God.
Il était croyant en la sainteté qui était puissante et la sainteté bon Dieu.
And like I said, he taught about an adult second conversion experience.
Il était parlé de deuxième conversion que adulte fait, qui est avec conversion de émotion, d'expérience.
A personal spiritual awakening. And this became a standard expectation in churches in the U.S. and in England. Wesley tried to stay within the Anglican Church. He didn't want to start a new religion. But as soon as he died, his followers created a separate church. And thousands of preachers spread throughout England and the United States. Generally, they did not have much education. But they went preaching around the countryside and establishing churches and Bible study groups. Also, the Methodists reached out to the common people. To the poor people, to the workers in the mines and in the fields. Wesley preached primarily outdoors, actually. He was the greatest preacher of his time, with the possible exception of George Whitefield. John Wesley and George Whitefield were very good friends, and they met at Oxford University in England.
John Wesley avec George Whitefield était amis, était côté à l'université Oxford en Angleterre.
They formed what they called the Holiness Club.
Ils ont formé ce que nous appelons Holiness Club, son club saint.
Actually, it was George Whitefield who first began to preach outdoors.
C'était George Whitefield qui a commencé à prêcher dehors.
They began to set a pattern for what became the evangelical movement. It was George Whitefield who trained John Wesley to preach in public. Whitefield practically invented the idea of the revival movement and the outdoor preaching. Now, Wesley and Whitefield were very good friends, but they had one major difference.
Wesley avec Whitefield était bons amis, mais il y a une différence qui était majeure entre eux.
Wesley was Arminian.
Wesley était Arminien.
And Whitefield was Calvinist, very strong Calvinist.
Et Whitefield était un gros Calvinist.
So ultimately, they divided from each other.
Et il y avait une grosse division entre eux.
Wesley only came to the Americas, to the colonies once.
Wesley était venu en Amérique une seule fois.
And when Wesley came to the colonies, he was very unsuccessful, actually. He went home in shame, actually. But not Whitefield, no. He came seven times. He traveled throughout the colonies. You're looking at a map right now. This is just one of his visits to the Americas.
I'm glad you caught that. That was just one visit that he did in Namik.
Whitefield was incredibly brave. He traveled in the wilderness.
Whitefield était très brave. Il était voyagé dans toute la wilderness, bien dans toute les États-Unis.
He would arrive in Philadelphia or Boston.
Il était passé en Philadelphie, Boston.
And the entire city would turn out. It's hard to exaggerate the influence of George Whitefield. Up to this time in the colonies, in the British colonies, the church attendance was very low.
Jusqu'à temps ça, na toute colonie, toute colonie, attendance mon m'oblige était très bas.
But in the 1740s, Whitefield began what was known as the First Great Awakening.
En 1740, Whitefield a commencé sa cuitelle premier grand réveil.
In most of the colonies, On the average Sunday, maybe 5 or 10% even went to church. We tend to think of the American colonies as being very Christian. That's what we've been taught. But really, that's not very true.
Mais c'est pas presque vrai.
The most important American figure during this time is Jonathan Edwards. He lived in Massachusetts and Connecticut. Which is where I'm from, by the way.
C'est là que j'en ai sorti.
And he began a revival in Massachusetts, which became very famous. In towns where maybe 5 or 10% of the people went to church, suddenly everybody was talking about the Bible. Many went through a very emotional, personal, spiritual awakening. Jonathan Edwards was a very strong Calvinist.
Jonathan était un calviniste très profond.
The members of this Great Awakening were famous for their sermons about hell. Jonathan Edwards was famous for a sermon titled "A Sinner in the Hands of the Angry God." They used a fear of hell as a motivation for people to be converted. And like John Wesley and like George Whitefield, there was a very, very strong emphasis on having a personal conversion experience.
Même avec John Wesley, avec George Whitefield, et Jonathan t'est accentué sur une conversion personnelle, émotionnelle, son expérience personnelle, émotionnelle, conversion.
A kind of adult spiritual awakening.
Comme un réveil spirituel que l'adulte fait.
It was during this time that what became the evangelical movement began to form in the United States.
C'est à partir de temps ça que ça me connaît qu'on y a comme mouvement évangélique commencé à établir aux États-Unis.
It was about being saved by faith alone.
été accentué sur sauver par la foi seule.
And it was very, very strongly Calvinist. The first great awakening wasn't as great as some people think. Although tens of thousands were spiritually awakened both in England and in the United States, maybe even hundreds of thousands. The effect did not last for very long, maybe 5 or 10 years. So as we come to the time of the American Revolution, the church was very Calvinist. And God was presented as an angry God. And church attendance fell again to a very low level. Americans are taught that our country was always very Christian. But at the time of the American Revolution, church attendance was really quite low. It's certainly higher today than it was then. And the churches were thought of as focusing in on negative things. Using a fear of hell as a motivation. And on the frontiers of America, there were very few churches. But then in the 19th century, another event occurred which was far more important to the history of Christianity. This is called the Second Great Awakening. It began roughly in the year
1800.
And it lasted for more like 40 years, instead of only 5 years. It's during this time that England and America became very Christian. Church attendance went from maybe 5 or 10% to maybe 40 or 50%. What was that?
Church attendance grew from 5 to 10% to how much?
More like 50%.
Yeah, thank you. Entre l'église dans 5 à 10% vient grandir bien augmenter de jusqu'à 50%.
There are a number of very important developments I want to spend some time talking about. At this time, Christianity, especially in America, became highly individualistic. Before this time, most people allowed their leaders to interpret the Bible. But at this time, it became common for the average person to read the Bible for themselves. And people began to think they had a right to interpret the Bible for themselves. And one of the things that came out of this Second Great Awakening was a sense that America was somehow a special chosen nation.
C'est ça ce que America, c'était une nation qui était choisie, qui était élue, qui était spéciale.
Believers began to stress following the Bible rather than following your own denomination.
Croyants commencent à stresser pour suivre la Bible au lieu pour suivre votre dénomination.
This is when democracy became a very common, important idea in America.
C'est à partir de temps ça que la démocratie est devenue une idée importante en Amérique.
The church in the United States became very Americanized.
The church in the United States became very Americanized?
Yes.
L'église avec États-Unis vient être américanisée.
For example, before this time, the idea that capitalism and Christianity would be friends was not normal.
Avant ça, capitalisme avec l'église n'est pas normal, puis lié ensemble.
But at this time, capitalism and Christianity were thought to have common goals.
Et à partir de temps ça, capitalisme avec christianisme était venu gagner des objectifs en commun.
And the idea that democracy and Christianity had similar goals also became common.
Et c'était très commun tout idéologie que démocratie avec chrétienté était gagné des points en commun.
And because individual effort is so important in the American spirit,
parce que l'effort individuel très important dans l'esprit américain.
It became part of Christianity. Individual effort became a part of Christianity.
Et puis ça a tout venu faire partie de chrétienté.
For this reason, during the Second Great Awakening, Calvinism was either rejected.
Pour raison, dans la deuxième grande réveil ça,
Or more likely, it was made into a softer, friendlier kind of Calvinism. I'll talk about that more later. I'm going to read a statement about this time in American history. By an author that I really appreciate. His name is Mark Knoll. He said, in the early 19th century, the Protestant movement in the Americas was changing.
Mouvement protestant avec America a commencé à changer.
From established forms of religion,
a changé de, religion établie,
in traditional denominations,
et denomination traditionnelle,
and pre-modern economies,
avec pre-modern économie,
to individualized Christianity.
For me, Christianity individual.
Based on rational thought.
Basé sur des pensées rationnelles.
And market-oriented economies.
Avec une économie,
God was thought of as less transcendent.
J'étais pensé avec bon Dieu, transcendant, c'est que bon Dieu pas partout.
And more imminent, more relational.
J'étais plus relationnel.
The individual relationship with God was stressed much more.
J'étais accentué relation individuelle avec bon Dieu.
People began to believe that the Bible alone was sufficient for understanding Christianity.
règles te suffisent pour te comprendre la chrétienté.
Church tradition and church teaching was less important.
Tradition avec enseignement l'église là était moins important.
And everyday life and personal economy became more important to Christianity.
La vie de chaque jour avec économie personnelle devient plus important pour la chrétienté.
People didn't listen to inherited truths. Instead, they sought to apply scientific method to studying the Bible. The result of this is that some Christian groups grew very quickly and others struggled. The winners during this time were the Christian groups that stressed individual faith. That included the Baptist churches and the Methodist churches. The Methodists went from a small group with maybe a few thousand members to become the largest religious group in America. Similar, the Baptists were a very small, very unimportant denomination. And they became the second largest group in America. The other form of Christianity that became dominant during this time was independent churches. Especially restoration churches. Groups that were trying to restore New Testament Christianity. Of course, this included what became the Church of Christ. What we know of as the Restoration Movement or the Stone Campbell Movement. During the Second Great Awakening, the movement that we're part of was the fastest growing movement in America. Many people point to one event as the chief beginning event of the Second Great Awakening. It happened in the U.S. state of Kentucky. It's known as the Cane Ridge Revival. The year was 1801. Many people say this is when the Second Great Awakening began. Here on the frontiers of America, tens of thousands came from all around, from hundreds of miles. People abandoned their work for a week or 2 weeks just to come to the revival. There would be 5 or even 10 different preachers speaking at the same time. Baptists, Presbyterians, Congregationalists, Methodists all came together.
baptiste, presbytérien, congressionaliste, méthodiste, donc on était en comté ensemble.
Nobody seemed to care what denomination you were part of. They were very emotional experiences. People were falling on the ground, fainting, even barking at trees. It was like what we think of as charismatic. This happened at a church that was led by a man named Barton Stone. The event was very spontaneous. No one was really organizing it. It just happened. People became so excited. They thought Jesus is going to come back. This movement was post-millennial. They believed that Jesus was going to come back soon. And the center of this great revival was going to be in America. Now, this person I mentioned, Barton Stone, he began a non-denominational movement that we now call the Stone-Campbell movement. And I'm going to say a lot about that movement. But for now, I want to talk about other events that happened during the Second Great Awakening. The most important theologian during the Second Great Awakening was Charles Finney. He came from the Congregationalist Church. This was the descendant of the Pilgrims. Of the Puritans.
So,
and similar would be the Presbyterian Church. Charles Finney was a very much of a Calvinist. Similar to John Edwards. But Charles Finney changed American Calvinism. Because the traditional Calvinism didn't work very well in America anymore. Because Calvinism teaches that we have no choice. But like I said, the American church became very Americanized. Individual effort is important. Democracy and Christianity are almost the same thing. So Charles Finney created what I call happy Calvinism. And Charles Finney talked about once saved, always saved. But he didn't emphasize so much the angry God. And remember we talked about limited atonement?
nous rappelons qu'on t'a parlé de atonement limité.
He didn't agree with limited atonement. It's not very logical, honestly. Because if you believe in Calvinism, that God chooses who's saved, then how can you deny limited atonement? And so Calvinists began to emphasize more of the happy versions of Calvinism. So he talked about the elect a lot, but they didn't talk about the reprobate so much. And they emphasized once saved, always saved. And Charles Finney made it much easier to become a Christian. The most important single innovation of Charles Finney was the idea of instantaneous conversion. You come to church a complete pagan. You have a warming in your heart. And you become a Christian right then and there, right exactly at that time. It was kind of like instantaneous conversion. So you would have a revival. And maybe 1,000 people would show up. And 5 of them would leave already saved.
How many of them?
Maybe 500 would be saved right there at that revival. So the idea of coming to church for a revival and being saved right then and there, this became an important part of Christianity. He created the idea of what was known as the mourner's bench. You come to church. You hear a very emotional sermon. You have a feeling in your heart. You come forward to the front of the church. You confess that you're a sinner. And then you're converted right then and there. Not much emphasis on repentance. And certainly no emphasis on baptism. So here we see the modern American version of Christianity being created. Under the influence of this person that you maybe never heard of before. His name was Charles Finney. He was an incredibly successful evangelist. Entire cities were converted to his version of Christianity. There was an area in the American state of New York. It was crazy. People stopped going to work. And and entire communities were converted to this revival. Let me read a quote from Charles Finney about baptism. Could you read that?
L'Église a toujours estimé qu'il était nécessaire d'avoir quelque chose de ce genre pour répondre à ce but précis. À l'époque des apôtres, le baptême répondait à ce but. Il occupait la place qu'occupe aujourd'hui le siège anxieux comme manifestation publique de leur détermination à être chrétien.
Wow, look at that.
Regardez ça.
He said, sure, it's true.
Oui, c'est vrai.
In the Bible and in the early church,
dans la Bible et dans l'église, la première église, non?
Conversion happened when you're baptized.
Conversion, il est baptisé.
You were saved when you were baptized.
Vous êtes sauvé, le baptisé.
He said, now we're replacing that.
Il dit qu'on a remplacé ça.
From now on, we're not going to have conversion when you're baptized. You're going to have conversion at the Saint-Jean-Jean, whatever that is. I don't know that French word there. The anxious seat. In other words, people just come forward and say, oh, I just got saved. We call this praying Jesus into your heart. This is the basic form of Christianity in America, which has become the basic form of Christianity in some ways throughout the world.
Ça c'est base chrétienté en Amérique qui vient base chrétienté en pile côté dans mode là.
Some people call it easy believism. Just come to church. Have an emotional experience. Believe in Jesus. And ask Jesus into your heart. And then you have instantaneous salvation. Repentance, not very important.
Repentance, pas important.
Baptism, not important at all.
Baptême, pas important du tout.
This became the standard view of across many Christian groups in America.
Ça avait des standards, en pile l'église en Amérique.
Of course, the Baptists still did immersion.
Bien sûr, Baptiste toujours fait immersion.
But that had nothing to do with when you're saved. That's just something you do afterward. And the Methodist church adopted this idea. And what became evangelical Christianity became normal Christianity in America. All right, now let's take our break now. So, 5 minute break.
Yes. Okay, thank you. En tout cas, très intéressant, première partie ça. Nous